Well, we have already talked about a few professions this morning, so I want to talk to you about something that you and I all fall under. There are times that all of us represent Jesus in whatever way, however we do life. There are ways that we come in contact with people. And what do we do when somebody has looked at the church and said, oh, they did me dirty? Or somebody looked at you. And whether you tried or not, they felt you did them dirty. How do we handle that when we claim that we are representing Jesus? Maybe we have hurt somebody else, or maybe somebody else has friends and we're stuck with picking up the pieces. But the truth of the matter is that all of us are human here this morning. Are any of you here human? All of you are here are human, right? And maybe we've been hurt, maybe somebody else has been hurt, but we may find ourselves picking up the pieces. And we hurt people. We hurt people, including those that we love and trust. And you know, I want to just say this morning, there is nothing better than when believers come around somebody who has been hurt. And sometimes that's even us when we've unintentionally or maybe even intentionally hurt somebody and come around and realize that we have hurt them and try to build them back up. Like a rocket booster, we can use good friendships. We can use people that will come around beside us and boost us to areas and places that we couldn't get to on our own. We can use the inspiration of other people to get to places that we never thought we could on our own. On the converse side, though, few things hurt us more than unhealthy people who we may surround ourselves with and cause us pain and hurt. See, we tend to get close to people who we share experiences with. And you know, when they hurt us or somebody else is hurt, it can do great damage. Mrs. Knorr was a sixth grade English teacher. And she took my little behind and sat me down, and over the course of weeks and months taught me the parts of speech that I had not ever learned prior to that time. And what Mrs. Knorr did was give me a new appreciation for language. Mrs. Wentz was also involved in the English program in high school, and she taught me to get on my feet and to talk and to do public speaking. Dr. Dick Morrison taught me business law. And Dr. Douglas Buckwalter taught me that faith and living, I understood those things pretty good. But he really drove home the fact that what we say we do ought to reflect the kind of people that we are every day. But what do you do when somebody has done you dirty? There's nothing that can turn us off quicker than when people let us down. And we have all been there. The truth is that you are probably the topic of somebody else's counseling sessions. All right? as well as you may be going to a counselor to share about some hurts that somebody has done to you. And the reason why is we're human. Whether we intended to do it or not, we're human and we hurt one another. Another thing that I will say to you this morning is that your biography, your personal experiences, your own story influences your theology, influences how you view and understand and see God. And when that happens, it's easy for us to have bad things happen and say, oh, God's people don't care about me, or God doesn't care about me, or I was thinking whether I should say this or not, and I will. The church people, they suck. All right? Sometimes those are the things that you hear people who've been done dirty by the church and its people. Your life influence has a lot to do with your expressions of faith. So what do you do when you get hurt? This morning we're going to talk a little bit about Saul and David. Saul mentored David and then he did him dirty. David lived through it and did some great things, but he did share some dirty things himself as a leader to other people. So the moral of the story this morning is not, be just like David. Okay? That's not the moral of this story this morning. In 1 Samuel 16, we see David as this shepherd boy. His dad doesn't even consider him amongst the older brothers when someone, a prophet by the name of Samuel comes to town to evaluate what is the king leadership potential here. But the prophet says, goes through Jesse's sons, and he says, I don't see the right one here. Do you have any more boys? And Jesse said, well, yeah, I got a son, David, who's out in the yard with the sheep picking up their poop. All right? And if you turn over to chapter 17, David is brought before his brothers and before his father, and God anoints him, Samuel anoints him, the next king of Israel. Why is it that everybody in the house saw David and didn't think very much of him, and yet God saw little old David and thought, that is the next king? When others see a shepherd boy, God so oftentimes sees a king. It didn't change anything at that moment. He continued shoveling poop while his older brothers got up and went out and fought. And you turn to chapter 17, and David goes to visit his brothers with their lunches, and the brothers are at war. Israel's going against the Philistines, who are saying, hey, let's make this quick. You bring your biggest and best fighter. We'll bring our biggest and best fighter. And King Saul says, let me look around. Let me look around. King Saul himself is a head and shoulders above the rest of the crowd in his army. If anybody that day should have been getting up and saying, send. Yeah, it was Saul. In that day, leaders led their troops into battle. And Saul was the most dominant of the people in his army. And of course, old Saul, as humble as he was, said, well, you know, I just don't want to do all the ministry work. I just don't want to show, you know. So he begins to look around and say, let me see, is there anybody here? And David says, hey, it's not my battle. The battle is the Lord's. And he shall overcome. And we shall know his victory. Saul said, all right, I got my man. I got my man. And he begins to load David down with armor and spears and head protection. And David says, no, 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 that's too much for me. Listen, I've taken on bears and wolves and all that kind of stuff. Let me just go get a few stones and my slingshot. That's right. That's right. David goes out and he slays Goliath. He slays Goliath. He takes those stones and hits him right at a place where he is weakest, and down he goes. And whatever mission after that, whatever mission Saul sent David on, David was successful. And he got a high ranking. Saul gave him the highest of rankings in his army. This pleased the troops, as we've read, and Saul's officers as well. And when the men were returning home after they had battled the Philistines in another battle, the women came out from the town of Israel. They came out from the different towns to meet King Saul and to sing and dance with joyful songs with timbrels and lyres. As they danced, they sang, Saul has slain his thousands and David his ten thousands. And Saul says, hey, what's that? What is going on here? You like this guy more than you like me? Saul got angry, as the children noticed this morning. He got angry because somebody else had something he didn't have. They were crediting David with killing his tens of thousands, but him only his thousands. And Saul thought, what more can he want but my kingdom? And from that moment on, we're told that Saul kept his eye close on David. Saul was entrusting his leaders. But now, this particular leader, he was feeling threatened by. And Saul had felt a sense of entitlement. When God gives you an opportunity, it isn't about you and what you can hold on to. It is about God and what he wants to do with you in that role. It's not about enjoying the perks and the benefits and having everybody else do your thing. Saul got off base, and he was no longer representing God to his people. He became representing himself as Saul the king. Quick diversion, all right? Mount Everest. There it is. Never saw that picture of it, did you? All right, but that's Mount Everest. It is 29,000 feet high, right? Meters, 29,000 feet high. There we go. Do you know that you will climb several days to get to the base camp at Mount Everest? To the base camp, just to get started on the mountain, all right? You will then hike up to Camp 1, spend a day, and go back down to the base camp. See, if you keep going, your body will not acclimate to the higher elevations. And Doc, I got you here, you got me here. So you will get something called cerebral edema, right?
Right.
Right. That means your brain swells. Yeah, okay. So you go up to camp one, you spend a day and a night, and then you return to the base camp. Then you go up to camp two, all the way up to camp two, spend a night, and go back down to the base camp. Go up to camp three. You get any idea? Spend the night and then go back down to the base camp. Finally, you go to camp four and you sleep and you go back down to the base camp, and then you can hike to the top of Mount Everest. Our bodies are not designed to be elevated to those places of height. That's why, like in Mexico City and other places where you have runners and football players, they got to be careful in the altitudes. If you were to be dropped out of a plane and you stayed at the top of Mount Everest, if you jumped out of a plane, landed on the top of Mount Everest, and you would only live for a few hours and then you would die. Leadership is the same thing, the same way. A lot of times folks get placed into leadership and then they start to feel entitled and it becomes more about them than it does about the people they serve. Saul thought he was the man. You and me, we have to remember we got to go back down the mountain and breathe a little clean air all the time, so that our heads don't swell. With Saul's insecurity and entitlement, let's see what he did. In one instance, David was leading worship, and Saul threw a spear at him. Now, Saul was not nearly as good as Ted Lasser at throwing darts. Do you remember him, the guy, the perfect dart thrower there? And Saul thought, well, I can't do that one again, so let's give him another project. And he said to him, I want you to go out and bag 100 foreskins from the Philistines. I'm not going to encourage you to look that story up, but those are something that I don't think you just find laying around for people to harvest. I think you had to kill 100 Philistines to get 100 foreskins. And the guys who gave him up didn't do it easily. But David comes back with a bag and 100 foreskins. Saul gets a little bit perturbed to David again, and he starts to include his children in these opportunities to betray David. But every time the kids give it up, and they tell David before Saul can enclose his trap on them. And finally, David gets a little bit afraid. He gets a little bit ticked off. And he joins the Philistines. Now, I'm not so sure that the Philistine leaders wanted David to get too close to them. Okay? Do you understand why I'm doing this right now? Okay? I don't think they wanted him to get too close to them. But he goes and he continues to go with his army, and David's men and David himself eludes Saul by hiding in caves. Then one day, Saul goes into a cave. He has to go to the bathroom. And he gets on one of these ICU ropes. You remember ICU ropes. And David's men are like, man, this is great. This is what the Bible talked about. One day you're going to have a chance to get even with Saul. David, go and get him. And Saul comes into the same cave that David and his men are hiding out in. And David goes out with his knife. And he crept up unnoticed. And he cuts a hole in Saul's robe, cuts off a piece of the material. And later on, when Saul comes out of the cave, David comes out and says, "Hey, Saul, I'm not interested in hurting you. You can trust me." Now, I was thinking, maybe that's where we get the word embarrassed. So, but maybe we shouldn't say that in church. I don't know. So, David's men tell David to go ahead and kill him. But he says, no. He says, I have this dream that God wants me to do something special, to take on leadership. Another time, David sneaks into Saul's camp, and he gets a spear and a jug, and he yells out to Saul, "You can trust me. Why try and kill me?" Eventually, Saul dies. David becomes king. And the moral of the story is not that David was the good guy and Saul was the bad guy. The moral of the story is we are all human and we tend to hurt others. And as humans, we tend to be able to be hurt. That same Gallup poll tells us that 81% of Americans still believe in God. So why do we have so few perfect representatives? Why and how? We're human. We're human. I have a little something up there, just some steps to go through when we are next one there. Ike, all right. How do we deal with hurts, whether they're our own hurts, which are oftentimes many, or dealing with somebody else who's had hurts? We address the pain. We name it to shame it. We talk about, hey, this has hurt me. We name it to shame it. We grieve the loss. Hey, man, you know, I used to feel this way, and then that person came along, and they really hurt me. And I just wish I could go back to where it was before. We clean the wound. You kind of get that hydrogen peroxide, is that what you call it? And you pour it into the wound to clean it. It may hurt for a while, but when it properly heals. Forgiveness and allowing you to do even more for God than ever before is now available to you. At the same time, we need to always be guarding our minds, focus not on the wrong, but on God's goodness. Instead of saying, God, I see you've given us a beautiful day, and you've given us rain, and you give me a job, and you've given me children or grandchildren or whatever. Thank you. For even in the bad times, I can still say thank you for what you've done. Compartmentalize your learnings. You ever go to a buffet? All of you are lying. You all go to buffets, right? Come on. How many of you have gone to buffets? You know, you get those places where they put the potatoes down, and then they put the meat down, and then they put the whatever down, cornbread and the vegetables. They're all kind of compartmentalized. Well, you know what? Sometimes people will do us dirty, but we've got to remember there are good lessons even from wrong people, from people who have wronged us. Learn from those. And then the last thing is to stay open. stay open. What is God's next step for you? What is God's next step for you?